Donnie and Aiton Collin are the authors of the Unincorporated Universe novels. The first book in the series, The Unincorporated Man, won the Prometheus Award for Best Novel in 2010. The most recent book in the series, The Unincorporated Woman, was released in August by Tor Books. Our interview with the brothers kicks off a bit before our formal questions began, with a discussion about the difficulties of pronouncing Aiton's name.
All right. Thanks, sir. Aiton, right?
That's it, you got it.
Got it, all right.
There's a funny story about that, by the way.
Let's hear it, absolutely.
I don't know, it's when we were so worried when they did our first book on audio CD that they'd get our names wrong, because everybody gets their names wrong. If you read them, they don't sound like, you know, they don't spell out. That we went to the unusual effort of trying to find the voiceover artist that was going to record it, which normally isn't done. So
was that just a Google search, or did you?
No, we went through. Yeah, we started tracking down. We went through the assistant editor, and she had to get special permission, and then she had to, because it's contracted separately, and then we had to find the guy, and finally we were put in touch with him, so that he would be really clear on how to pronounce our names, and we were so happy.
He sat down with us and asked us how to pronounce all these.
He didn't sit down with us. We talked over the phone.
Over the phone.
We don't even know what it looks like.
Pronounce all these names. All the names in the book that he was a little bit unsure.
I got to tell you, cool. I'm recording this, and if you could speak into the mic, that would be,
yeah, see?
So pretty much.
This is an excellent story, and I had
right,
to
record it. Right, no, he went ahead and
so go back up now.
Had us go ahead and go over all the names in the book, including our own.
Sure.
So is it pronounced Nila or Niela, or just all little things like that, so that he'd get everything correct. And darn, when he listened to the book, he got every single thing correct. Pronounced every single name and term and concept exactly the way we envisioned it in our imaginations,
except
for my name.
Were you
The Unincorporated Man by Donnie and
Aiton Collin.
Aiton. Yes.
It was Aiton.
You're like, make it sound more science fiction. If it's Aiton, people will understand.
Aiton. That's true. That does sound science fiction-y. Yeah. I am Aiton from France.
Aiton sounds like your 12-year-old like kid friend.
Aiton sounds like I'm Spock's cousin. You know,
there you
I can work
Which
with
is,
that.
True.
Aiton.
Yeah. They both call Sarah.
It is the book of Aiton.
So tell us a bit about the Unincorporated universe. For someone who hasn't read any of those books, what is the groundwork there?
Well, it all started essentially when I looked at a bunch of kids getting crap for the money that the state had stolen from the citizens to give them an education.
He was a teacher.
Public school teacher. Compton had like the third highest per capita spending per student in the state of California. It was literally like Beverly Hills, one other really ritzy place, and then Compton. They were throwing crap loads of money, and these kids weren't getting squat. And what was tragic about it is that a lot of these kids were pretty damn sharp. I would start chess clubs wherever I go, because I was bored, I like playing chess. And most of the places I'd start a chess club, I would generally be the best player and stay that way for a nice long time. Within 2 months, if I wasn't paying attention to that game, those kids handed me my ass. Every single time.
They're sharp, yeah.
You're very sharp. I never saw a learning curve like that ever. And I went to elite private schools where the kids go on Colorado River trips, and I went to these small
Moving
little schools.
Moving the story forward.
No, I'm enjoying this.
Okay. They're going to edit the crap out of this.
All right. Well, I don't know how long we got. If we've got like 5 minutes left and you spend 20 years on the river, I don't want to spend like 20 minutes on the river if we've got, you know, 10 minutes.
There's got to be a better way of helping these people than simply ripping them off, teaching them nothing, paying a crap load of bureaucrats a lot of money with massive benefits for literally robbing these kids of their education. And then it suddenly occurred to me after a while, maybe we should apply capitalism.
Interesting.
Honest, harsh, ruthless, apply capitalism, but in a way that no one's ever really done before. So I thought of what I thought was an original concept, so it turns out Milton Friedman thought of it too, which makes me sad that I wasn't original, and really happy that for at least one thought, I thought like Milton Friedman.
I was going to say, if you're going to share a thought with somebody, Milton Friedman's not a bad guy. Yeah.
When my back hurts, I think like Milton Friedman thought. Oi, my back. Sorry, go ahead. Sorry.
That's the best you had?
That's the best. I got nothing. I'm out.
We're not going to do anything.
I'm done. I'm out.
Yeah, you can edit that one out.
No,
okay, good. All right. So,
keep going.
Keep going. All right. No, you can interject at this point.
Yeah,
I can.
Donnie,
well, thank you so
this,
much. I came in
we
to this
broke.
Process. Well, it's, you know.
And failures.
Aiton had, for the longest time, been sharing really cool ideas with me that he would do really nothing about. And I kept encouraging him to write because he would, hey, what about this great idea? That's a great idea. You should write it up. I even at one point tried to get one of his stories introduced to a friend of mine who was in the entertainment business. She didn't bother reading it. And part of the problem was that Aiton, you know, he likes telling stories, not so much getting into the rich detail of how to make them readable.
Turn them into a book.
Right. You know,
believe it or not, I don't present well.
you have to say that into the microphone. So at one point...
If this were a video podcast, you'd be the most popular guy we've ever had.
Right. So at one point, we were both, you know, completely broke and had nothing to do. I'm an advertising copywriter by trade.
In my 30s, living at my parents' house, unemployed.
Right.
And pretty much the definition of failure in this country.
Well, right. After walking away in protest from the situation you'd been in with schools, right?
Sure. No, let's go with that, Eitan. I like that one. That's noble. I almost hear music behind that. I'm good. We're going with that story.
Yeah, from here
he walked away. In protest, he walked out of his class as the students clapped behind him and the bus driver stopped their buses.
Leaving to gangster's paradise.
So I was in a similar situation where I had been living in Israel for a while and I'd moved back and couldn't find a job. I was living at my in-law's house with my three kids.
That might be worse than living with your parents.
It was pretty bad. And I said, you know what, Eitan, we're both broke and unemployed. You know, I like your stories, and I know how to craft copy, you know, to sell, so to speak.
The world is often changed by those who have nothing to lose.
Pretty much. I said, why don't you just throw some of your ideas at me, and let's take a look at what you've got and see if we can work together.
So this was your first collaboration?
Yes.
Wow. Awesome.
So, well, we had been collaborating for years, like what-ifing each other, you know, across a bubbly jacuzzi. You know, we even wanted to have that jacuzzi bronze before we came up with our, you know, ideas. sadly, it ended up in a junk pile.
Friday night dinner tables, sitting in temple.
Yeah, we'd been doing it for years, not realizing essentially we were collaborating.
Right.
So at this point, we were really collaborating, and I said, give me all the ideas you've been working on over the past 10 or 15 years. And he gave me a pile of stuff, and the unincorporated man, I don't know, was it a 10-page treatise?
No, it was just an idea I had in my head. I had this idea for like 10 years in my head.
Okay, so was it just an idea? I don't even remember what I looked at that I saw. So it was probably written down, probably just a premise, and I said, this thing is a winner. This is a great idea. And at that point, we sat down and we mapped out.
This was Justin's story?
Yes.
Yep. Okay.
So we just mapped out. I said, here's what we need. We need an outline. We need a beginning, middle, and an end. And let's just start working on it. And we did. We outlined the whole thing. We had a system by which we were going to write, and we threw that out after the first week because it just completely didn't work. He was going to write one chapter, I was going to write another, and then because I'm an advertising copywriter and the craft is much more important to me than necessarily to him, I was going to...
I don't give a crap about that stuff.
I'm trying to be politic. He doesn't care. So I was going to not only write the other chapter, but I was then going to go back and straighten everything out. But it turned out that in the process of straightening everything out, I was actually adding a lot more to it, and that was how I wrote the story. You know, we outlined... He would throw out the first draft because he sees the world more clearly than I do. But in going over, I was no longer just editing and fixing and grammaring. I was adding whole chunks of dialogue and adding scenes to make, you know, point A and point D align because there was all sorts of weird logic going on.
And I would do all sorts of wonderful things for him. Like in our third book, we have this scene where we go ahead and basically to prevent a holy war from erupting, religion comes back big time. It's not mentioned in the first book. You see it in the second and the third book. All of a sudden, one of the groups, religion, is there. For reasons which, as the readers will read, they'll see why. It doesn't exist, and then all of a sudden, poof, like all water added to dehydrate it, it's back. But they're in danger of going back into holy war, because if you're fighting for your survival and you're religious, it's easy to say God wants the other person dead. So we have a scene where one of the main characters basically squashes the jihad and crusade, basically goes, no more, we're not going to have this bullshit again. So I write it up. I get the whole thing set up. I get the whole thing ready to go. I basically get it up to the dramatic scene where the two leaders of the religious groups are there, and this person's about to lay down the law, and it's. Oh, and then I say, "Oh, Donnie, please insert religious article. Please insert religious reasons for toleration." And then write the next scene.
And then he writes the next scene.
Toleration is involved in really healthy ways.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's not.
No, but the truth is,
and that's like basically, you know, a theological process which has taken 2,000 years of the greatest minds to develop. Oh, you take care of that, Donnie.
You got a free afternoon.
Yeah. It took about 2 weeks, but that's the stuff that I love doing. He doesn't like that stuff. Yeah. I love learning and learning the hadiths and learning Christian theology about pacifism and Jewish theology, going into the science, working with the scientists and the particle physicists and all of those guys. I love giving them problems that you know they get a smile on their face when they get my email because they know it's going to be some kind of whacked out thing that they're going to have to make logical because it's hard science fiction. I love that minutia and that
if
detail.
You could
he can't stand it.
4G's constant.
Yeah.
Without worrying about hitting something and smashing yourself into 1,000 little pieces, how long would it take you to get from the orbit of Mars to the orbit of Pluto? And we got an answer.
And it's an amazingly
short period of time.
So that's how we ended up working. That ended up being
wonderful.
A lot better because we filled in each other's weaknesses.
Sure. Now, this most recent book in the series, The Unincorporated Woman, came out in August from Tor Books, correct?
Correct.
Tell us a little bit about that. This seems like a departure in the series. You have a new protagonist?
Correct.
Spoiler.
Sorry.
Spoiler, so
and
yes.
Actually, I wanted to ask about the spoiler
There will be
aspect.
Spoilers.
We'll
get there.
So if you haven't read, if you want to go through, know that there'll be spoilers.
Stop listening now.
The problem is we had a great character for books one and to a certain degree book two. But when you create a character with strong convictions and a person who's basically got their belief structure...
Give me liberty or give me death.
Give me liberty or give me death. The means are the ends, which was Justin Court's favorite and most important saying. The ends justify the means. And he was always, the means are the ends. If you choose to murder and kill to achieve what you've done, then you've done it through murder and killing, and that's all there is to it. Mm-hmm. But when you're fighting a war for survival, we'd kind of written him into a corner. So we either have to change him completely... Or effectively, we have to change him at the core of who he was, or we got to shove him out an airlock. Not literally, but still.
Literally.
That's commendable. It's really hard to give up like your built-up.
It was some of the toughest writing to do when I was getting at the end there, because you like the guy, and he's heroic.
He's carried you through two books, and he's really heroic.
And he's heroic, and he's the guy you really want. You want a guy that moral.
To win.
To win and be in charge. That's a guy you want running your civilization.
But it's not realistic.
You're not going to win the war.
You won't win it.
Go ahead, Jason.
Did you guys come to this conclusion together?
He had to go.
Did you know that you were going to do a third book in the series without him?
By the middle of the second book, we started to suspect. But when Tor certainly didn't know we were chucking the protagonist out of there.
How did they feel about that?
When they signed
for it, they'd already purchased it.
We were curious as to how they were going to take it.
Yeah.
You know, but we did discuss it with our editor.
Very supportive of all the crazy stuff we've thrown in there.
Excellent.
And just to give them credit, we were like, there's no way in hell they're going to accept. Oh, wow, they did it. Okay, you know.
Have you received much blowback from fans who are frustrated with the spoiler aspect or new readers who come into the series?
We received blowback for essentially really screwing with not just the protagonist. We've screwed with a number of major characters in ways that would be unforgivable, I think, in other series. Mm-hmm. And I think our feeling was twofold.
The
story needs to tell itself. And two, we were probably too stupid to think about, lasting legacies of books. We just said this is where the story's going, and nobody's
safe. And the disadvantage of never having done this before.
Yes.
So we didn't do any short stories. We never collaborated. We never wrote anything. So we just said, let's just write a four-book series and see what happens.
So it's a four-book series. This is not a trilogy.
It's a four-book trilogy.
Okay.
Because
it's a publishing term for when you make the third book so damn long, they laugh at you and cut it in half.
We accidentally turned in 333,000 words for our third book, and they said, that's a lot of words.
Unless your last name is Rowling or King, you don't get to do that.
This is really funny because I imagine it doesn't happen with many people. One of the well-known authors who's mentored us through this process is Robert Sawyer.
Okay.
And this is the kind of way we worked, and we still work to a certain extent. We have the luxury of not looking at word count. We would just sort of write it, and then we would add it up at the end. Hey, look how many words. Isn't that lovely?
Well,
and
we would write each chapter as its own document.
Right.
As a form of security. That way, if something goes wrong, you can either lose a chapter, then lose everything.
But we wouldn't look. It was like, I don't know why. We just wouldn't look. Let's see what it all adds up to in the end.
Ooh,
and it seemed to be taking an inordinately long time to write this book.
Well, we finished writing that book at a time when something really sucky happened to us. So we stopped caring about word count or this or that.
Yeah,
and something you'd prefer not to get into here.
Well, our mom passed away.
Our mom passed away.
So it was tough.
But we just kept writing,
and then once I finally put it all together, I looked at it and I said, okay, this is not good. I mean, it's good. We were really happy with the work, so I called up Rob Sawyer that night, and I said, Rob, what do I do? We have way too many words. He said, okay, you're not the first authors to turn in way too much information. Here's what you do. You write down the word count. David, we finished the book. It came out to this many words. I think we should talk. Just that simple.
However, it turns out to be good, because instead of being ridiculously late with our third book, we were obscenely early with our fourth.
That's right. Suddenly you're popular, gentlemen.
Yeah.
So You know, this Unincorporated Woman, it's already received Strong Creation from Library Journal, another Prometheus Award nomination. Is
yes,
that correct?
Against Vern Vinge of all people.
Now, the Prometheus Awards are given to promote libertarian science fiction. From what you said earlier, I have a suspicion that you are politically libertarian, or...
I'm a flaming libertarian with some environmental concerns. He's hardcore.
I'm a Republican, a fiscal Republican.
Okay.
Yeah, so I would say I'm more of a Reagan Republican than a Bush Republican.
Okay. So how is the community, the science fiction community, kind of take into that? Is that making you feel like insiders or outsiders?
No, we don't talk about it. Okay. You know, and the truth of the matter... Well, sometimes we do. Nobody gets a good shake. The libertarian government in the first book are shown to be inept and stupid. Mm-hmm. If you want to say that this is a...
Yeah. Grasping and... all-encompassing.
So we've had people who are on both sides of the political spectrum come up to us and say, thank you. Mm-hmm. You've shown the corporations to be the bastards we all know they are.
Enslaving SOBs.
And those idiot libertarians who like to sit on the fence and not make any choices, yes, that's exactly what would happen.
Although we love reading the reviews of people that we're pretty sure never finished the book.
Because they're like,
you just love libertarianism. This is nothing but a screed, and you're just saying how great the corporations are and how everything wonderful. I was like, you didn't get to the end.
Right. So the truth is the philosophies are libertarian, which is personal responsibility, less government. That holds true. But ultimately, the story is about no matter how perfected a system you create, it only takes one human to screw it up.
Right.
Because, you know, humans go for power grabs no matter, you know, what flag they're rallying around, unfortunately.
So was that outlook affecting, or was that outlook what you were considering as you were working on the book, or were the demands of the novel more?
Let him finish the question.
Well, no.
I don't even want to at the end of the question.
He saw where I was going with it. Eitan, you got telepathic.
Absolutely. Thank you. There's an overarching theme that actually...
You're out of the will. Yeah, go ahead.
That actually did inform all of the writing, which is what price freedom?
Okay.
In other words, what is freedom? Once you figured out what freedom
is it
worth
dying
for? What are you
willing
to do for it? Are you willing to die for it? Are you willing to kill... are you willing to risk your loved one's lives for it? And how many of the other side are you willing to murder for it? And that's at some point...
is it murder?
At some point,
and then you have to ask that question: is it murder if you're fighting for a greater value? At what point are you a freedom fighter? At what point are you a terrorist?
So this really explains why Justin could continue to be the protagonist.
Because the war moved beyond him.
Only Sandra in the third book, she's more, I hate to say it, Hector's real opposite. Hector Sambianco is the antagonist. Sandra isn't stuck to the same.
Sandra is terrifying because she sees what needs to be done. And then is ruthlessly willing to do it.
Right.
And once she realizes, she decides the goal is worthwhile.
Okay.
Whether it's building a crow unit or liberating humanity, the ends justify the means.
Right. With Hector, he was a living embodiment of an ideal, which is freedom. And if that's what you are, it's really hard to make you particularly complex. You're a one-horse pony to a certain extent. Even in the second book, you can hear him making fun of himself. Oh, am I starting to do a speech again? Yes, but we like it, Justin. But really, at the point that you're doing that, even as a writer, where even the protagonist is making fun of himself, you need something different. And again, Sandra comes in really as Hector's, and she will prove to be, in some cases, worse than him.
She will do things that it never even occurred to him to do.
And
she
that
will
it
unleash
would,
things
right.
that are just... And she does it. And she realizes it's bad. And there are elements in the fourth book where she really realizes. She knows what she's doing, and she knows how horrible it is. But she does it.
Interesting.
The question comes up, what price freedom?
Right.
You know, did Justin not answer the question fully? We argue that he did not answer the question fully. We argue that freedom is a value of such inestimable... It's such an inestimable value. It's a good thing you turned off your phone.
I did, actually, but the message thing didn't get turned off.
Well, how could you turn off your phone and not have the message thing get turned off?
I don't know how.
It's either vibrate or it's not vibrate. It's not like, you know, a one or a zero.
This is a perfect segue into my next question.
Yeah, anyways, there you go.
Gentlemen, go in a moment. You mentioned interviews before. You're not a big fan of the process of self-promotion. Does tag teaming make it easier for you?
What? What do you mean we're not?
I'm specifically referring at least in part to the joint interview that you conducted on each other back during the...
Oh, that was funny, though. That was our very first interview, and they said, interview yourselves.
And we were like, what? What?
That's it?
No other authors have
really?
To do this.
Really?
Really, that's it?
How lazy is that? I mean, so can you write the book for us, too? And then you come on.
We'll promote it if you write it for us.
Essentially, no, we simply wrote out the conversation we had based on that, then reviewed
and
it.
And we thought it was pretty funny.
It was very funny.
The truth of the matter is we
assumed they were going to reject it and tell us to write another one. But this is what Tor does. We send them the craziest thing we can imagine, and they let it go by. I'm not even sure they're reading half of them most of the time, but hey, as long as we can get away with it.
Look, my background is in advertising, so everything that we do is about branding. You know, our cards have our pitch on the back of the card.
Right.
We had a web show that, so Hollywood is on hiatus now, where we were interviewing, you know, we were doing speed dating panels, 10-minute panels with well-known authors. Same topics that you would have for an hour, we would do in 10 minutes flat, and it was, you know, much faster. So we brand ourselves, you know, we're the Collin brothers, and we know that there are no other brothers around.
Right.
So we are absolutely about it. Excellent. Yeah.
Awesome business cards too.
Yeah, these are really are something else. And put ours to shame. I read on your blog that you were recently signed to the International Creative Management Agency.
Correct.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
And when can we expect the Unincorporated Universe to be a film TV adaptation?
That's a really good question. We'll give you our agent's name and you can ask him.
By popular demand.
The truth of the matter is we only signed about a month ago.
Okay.
And as my wife likes to say, show me the money. The truth of the matter is if you sign with them, that's a good thing because they really have stock.
They wouldn't sign you if they didn't think
they can make something happen. But the name of the game there is they have top flight directors, producers, actors. And so for them, it's a simple call to say, hey, I've got a property here that I think your actor or your producer would really like based on the stuff that they're doing. And it's all in-house. So there's nothing to report yet other than the fact
that... Hey,
JJ. Yes.
Sure thing.
Other than that, we're there, and then that's a good thing. Yeah. And they have... we were signed by it's called Book to Film Division, and we were signed by the head of that department, Nick Harris, and he feels very strongly that the...
excellent, wonderful human being.
Best human being ever. But he feels very strongly that the ideas...
Absolutely.
Yeah. Can I do the, like, the pitching, pimping, you know, shilling part?
Yeah, but I'd like to our agent.
Yeah, but I'm doing the shilling part.
Right,
you know, this is the part where we pretend like we're acting natural, but we're really selling the book.
Got it, okay.
Okay, that's what I'm saying.
It's seamless.
That's right. Anyways.
You're selling the movie now.
Thank you. Oh, well, yeah. No, it's more than that.
It's more.
Wait, there's more! If you order now! No. He sees it, the ideas of the Unincorporated Universe, as expanding out not just into movies, possibly Game of Thrones type of HBO Showtime series, but also... games, role-playing games, all sorts of stuff like that where you have human stock exchanges and where you have different levels and you have all that kind of Machiavellian stuff that goes on in our world that you can just... Anyways, that's what he wants. Yeah. And that's what we want because, you know, that means I get a nice fancy sports car.
That's wonderful.
I get another truck.
Well, thank you, gentlemen. We were just about out of time now, but that was really insightful, and we're a pleasure.
Thank you so much.
Here. Is there anything you're going to be doing at the con that you want to plug real quick?
We have a reading.
What time is that?
But that's not going to be out tonight.
I'm just asking for my personal thing.
Yeah, for his personal thing. But is there anything that we want to plug that's going to last forever?
Actually, yeah. Anything you want to plug?
That's what he's talking about.
Plug. Actually, I said at the con, so.
Yeah, he did say at the con.
Listen to Donnie.
He did, yeah. But listen to me because, you know, this is, you know.
All right. He's going to have millions of people. He knows how to plug.
This is a good thing. Do your job.
What do you want to plug?
Plug, bastard.
The Unincorporated Woman is out. Booklist loved it. Library Journal loved it.
Unincorporated Future will be out next year.
Yeah.
All right, thank
I think
you.
That's about it.
They booked so good, we got signed with a Hollywood television.
There you go.
There you go.
Hey.
All right, thanks, gentlemen.
You're very welcome. Okay.